All right, thank you for being here this morning. We are under our 75 from the best that I can count, but I have not been in a math class in a long time. So thank you for being here. We've also got our overflow room set up. And so next week, if we get a few more, we'll have an overflow room set up and be ready to go. So thank you for being here. I know we've got a large group. In fact, I had Nikki check on her phone what our Facebook group looked like. And we've got the most we've had on Facebook Live since pre-shutdown last time. And so for all of our Facebook people, thank you for being here. I miss your faces in your seats, but we will get there soon enough. And so thank you for joining us on Facebook and also on the radio. We've been in the midst of this study the last month or so on some characters that give us hope. And one of my favorite ways to preach characters is to kind of tell their stories. And we're going to do that a little bit this morning. But I've got two Old Testament characters that for some reason always seem to draw me in. And one is Solomon. And Solomon, we've already talked about. I preached on him a few weeks ago. But Solomon draws me in because he starts off so good and then he sinks like a rock. And I hope that he finishes well. And you get to Ecclesiastes and Proverbs and those things that come late in his life. But my other favorite Bible character is a fellow by the name of Elijah. And one of the reasons I like Elijah is from a sermon that you'll see in a few weeks that we're only going to allude to this morning. But Elijah reminds me a little bit of myself. Because there's going to be a point in Elijah's life when he says, God, I'm just tired. And not only am I tired, I'm fed up. And not only am I fed up, but I'm irritated. Not only am I irritated, but life is just kind of crummy. And I can resonate with Elijah just a little bit right now. Because life is kind of crummy. Now, I know we've got a lot to be thankful for, and I don't want to contradict everything Brandon said, because when we need a backup preacher, Kent, Brandon's our guy. We're just going to hand it over to him. But yet, it just seems a little blue right now. And so maybe some stories from the life of Elijah might turn our world from a little blue to a little different. The first encounter we get of Elijah that is really a story of merit is the story that really is more about another character than it is Elijah. But Elijah's story is great, right? I mean, you get 1 Kings chapter 18 that we're going to look at next week. That's the story of Elijah and Mount Carmel, and there's the battle with the prophets, and you've got the two altars that are built and the bulls that are on the altars, and God lights Elijah's altar on fire, and Elijah wins a great battle. And then you get the story of Elijah in the cave in the very next chapter. And you get the next chapter where Jezebel, who's this wicked witch of the West, so to speak, says, I'm going to get you. It's the last thing I do. And so Elijah runs and he hides. And he cries out. And he grumbles. And he wonders. And he blames God. And he says, I feel like I'm on this island all by myself. And then you get to 2 Kings chapter 2 where Elijah passes the baton to Elisha. And you get this great scene of Elijah being taken up into heaven. And Elisha, at least to some extent, gets to witness this event and is awestruck by it. But then there is this little known, well, it's not little known, but it's a little story that really begins Elijah's life that doesn't concern Elijah near as much as it concerns a woman. And so I want us to wrestle with that story a little bit this morning. So let's read it first. Sometime later, the brook dried up because there had been no rain in the land. Then the word of the Lord came to him, go at once to Zarephath in the region of Sidon and stay there. Let's read a little, preach a little. Sidon is way outside of Israel territory. I have directed a widow there to supply you with food. So he went to Zarephath, where he came to the town gate, and a widow was there gathering sticks. And he called to her and asked, would you bring me a little water in a jar so that I might have a drink? And as she was going to get it, he called out, and please bring me a piece of bread. She replied, surely as the Lord God lives. Notice her terminology. Even though she's in a foreign land, she very much believes in God. I don't have any bread, only a handful of flour in a jar and a little olive oil in a jug. And I'm gathering a few sticks to take home and make a meal for myself and my son, and there we will eat it and die. And Elijah said to her, do not be afraid. Go home and do as you have said, but first make me a small loaf of bread for me, and bring it to me, and then make something for yourself and for your son. For this is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. The jar of flour will not be used up, the jug of oil will not run dry, until the Lord sends rain on the land. She went away and did as Elijah told her, for there was food every day for Elijah and the woman and for her family. For the jar of flour was not used up, and the jug of oil never ran dry, in keeping with the word of the Lord from Elijah. Small character. We don't even know her name. We don't know her son's name. We don't know why she has fled to this area of Sidon. All we know is Elijah has been told by God, go there and stay for a while. And yet a conversation happens. Is what's interesting in the Bible, there's a lot of these conversations that take place back and forth between a man of God and someone from the population, whether it's the woman at the well or if it's with Jesus and Nicodemus. But there are these conversations that take place that are kind of odd and kind of out of the ordinary. And Elijah, at first we probably think arrogantly, goes in and he says, give me some bread. But the truth is in the world of Elijah's day, if a man came into town and asked a woman who was at the door, can I have some bread, the response would be, I'll go and make it. Not saying that's right, that's just the world of Elijah's day. So Elijah comes into town, and my guess is, this is very much God's directing. So he comes into town, and there at the gate is this woman who's getting enough sticks to light enough of a fire to bake the last loaf of bread, and Elijah, in our minds, probably not hers, arrogantly says, make me a loaf, please. Loaf might be the size of a good Thanksgiving biscuit that you're going to have in a few days. The widow will say, I have none. In fact, we're close to dying. My guess is none of us have been to this point. My guess is none of us have sat in our kitchens with the last little bit of food we had and said, this is the last meal. None of us have quite been to the point where the widow is. But Elijah's then going to give this answer, and he says, don't be afraid, because God says you're never going to run out. And I think that's where the power of the story is. See, the power of the story is not necessarily in the widow's willingness to go and make Elijah some bread, although that's what she does. The power of the story is in the promise of God through Elijah to this woman that says, you don't have any reason to be afraid. Because I can think of many reasons. I can think of many reasons for this widow. Why is she a widow? Well, obviously something happened to her husband. Maybe it was battle. Maybe it was the famine they're in. Something has caused her to run to Sidon, whatever that might be. And she's got multiple reasons to be afraid. But yet God says, don't. I've had a lot of questions about being afraid lately. Some of them from Christians, some of them from searchers, a lot of them from non-Christians. And they're afraid of viruses, and they're afraid of shutdowns, and they're afraid of people not wearing masks, and they're afraid of corona, I can't even say it anymore, COVID-19, and they're afraid of a thousand other things. And this week they were afraid about how they were going to get food. And I thought of this story. It was one of the calls I had this week that was from someone in our community who called me and said, I'm unable to get to the store. And so I sent my neighbor, and they went to the store, and they had to wait in line for an hour and a half. And they got to inside the store, and when they got to the bread aisle, the bread was empty. They might feel a little bit more like this widow than I've ever felt, because they needed the bread that was supposed to be in that aisle that wasn't in that aisle. So what do we do with this story? What do we do with the simple story of this simple woman who has had hardship and has had her heart broken and now is in a dire situation, who is desperate for just about anything and is basically making the last meal? What lesson can we learn from her? And I think the first lesson that comes out of this story is, in the midst of dire straits, and I think to say that this woman is in dire straits is probably an understatement. In the midst of dire straits, we're going to learn to trust in God. See, I can't even imagine what this widow has been through. I can't imagine what this widow has been through, losing a husband and having to leave the land of Israel and having to go through all that she has gone through, of which we only know a little tiny bit. But some of you can, because some of you have lost loved ones. Some of you have lost those who you shared a bed with for years. Some of you have lost children. Some of you have gone through heartbreak that I can never fully comprehend. And all I can tell you in the midst of those things is that we still got to trust in God, because at least she does. I don't know if dire straits is what we should classify what we're doing in 2020. Kind of feels like it sometimes, but it's probably not as bad as we may think it is. But isn't the answer still the same? I better trust in God. And it doesn't matter if I'm sick or not sick. It doesn't matter if I'm wrestling with food or if I'm not wrestling with food. I may have to eat squash. That really isn't dire straits. But I need to trust. Philippians 4 reads like this: Rejoice in the Lord always. I'll say it again, rejoice. Let your gentleness be evident to all, for the Lord is near. Do not be anxious about anything, but in everything, by prayer and petition with thanksgiving, present your request to God, and the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. Okay, that's usually a passage we use when we talk about our fears and our anxious thoughts and the fact that in the midst of all of those things, we're supposed to rejoice and we're supposed to be thankful. And my guess is that ought to be every single aspect of our lives. Most certainly moments like what we're in now. Is it so easy for us to focus on the negative, and it's so easy to focus on our frustrations, and it's so easy to focus on all the hardships going on around us, and it's so easy to focus about all the fears we might have, from food needs to COVID to whatever else is going on in our world? Are we going to have a job next week and pay the bills? To just trust and rejoice. Okay, I'm naturally an anxious person. You know that more than just about anybody except my immediate family. But what's odd is I don't think I've been as anxious through this as I thought I would be. And maybe it's because I've learned valuable lessons from you guys. That in the midst of difficult times, in the midst of what we might call dire straits, the answer is to learn to trust in God. Because the way we deal with our fears and the way we deal with our anxiety and the way we deal with our what ifs and what's going to happen next is not just to lay in bed and toss and turn, but it's to throw a prayer up to the one who can deal with it. The second thing I think we learn from this woman is in the midst of dire straits, we give to others. Okay, we have a lady, and she won't let me give her name, but we have a lady that comes in our office about 3 times a week. And so if you come in our office more than 3 times a week, you will know who the lady is. But she comes into our office 3 times a week with wanting stuff. Well, I need some cards, or I need some food, or I need this. And it's none of it's for herself. And all of it is to give to other people. And so every time she comes in, Lindsay meets her at the door and has got whatever it is she's called ahead for, whether it's groceries or whether it's cards or stamps or whatever it might be. And I asked her the other day, I said, why are you doing all of this? You don't need to do all of this yourself. And her answer was, I need to do something or I'm going to go crazy. And I said, well, you got that right. So, well, but why are you really doing all this? Because when I think of others, it takes the pressure off thinking about myself. I thought that was an interesting answer. Because in the midst of things that might get us down, maybe the answer needs to be quit reflecting so much on everything going wrong in my own life and start reflecting on everything going right or what I can do for other people's lives. There's that interesting story of Jesus in Luke 21 where Jesus sees the widow and the mite. Remember how that story goes? Here it is. As Jesus looked up, he saw the rich putting in their gifts into the treasury. He saw a poor widow put in 2 small copper coins. And he said, the poor widow is put in more than anybody else. For the people gave out of their wealth, but she gave all she had. Why did she give all she had? Because she needed to. Why is that sweet lady who comes into our office 3 times a week asking for things, why does she need to come into our office? Because she needs to give all that she has. And even in the midst of her hardship, and even in the midst of her concerns and her frustrations, whether it's the widow and the mite, whether it's the lady in our office, or whether it's the church in Colossians or 2 Corinthians chapter 8, who will give beyond what they should, they realize that they're doing that because somebody else needs it. Years ago, a preacher who I respect immensely said, here's how you handle your belly achers, which tells me that every church from ever has had belly achers. When the belly achers come to you and they're grumping about something, you give them a job to do. And so when Michael comes to me grumping and he says, I'm frustrated with this and I'm frustrated with this, what I need to do to Michael is I need to say, hey, by the way, they're out of bread at Albertson's and I hear you bought a couple new loaves. Why don't you baggy those things and deliver them to A, B, C, and D? Because pretty soon Michael's going to be thinking about others before he's thinking about himself. One of my greatest mistakes ever in my ministry happened almost 30 years ago now. And I was this young preacher. You don't know me with, most of you don't know me with brown, well, with hair for that matter. But I was this young preacher in Clayton, and we had this sweet little lady named Zelma Paget who has gone on to be with God. And we had one person in the nursing home. And so my goal was to go see Zelma every single week and to sit down and talk with her. And so I would go visit Zelma every single Sunday afternoon. And I would take communion to Zelma, and Zelma would then give me a check for $3 and say, put this in the church contribution. And I remember one day we were having this conversation before we did communion, and she was talking about how she needed a heart medicine that cost $17 and that she only had $15. And she gave me a check for $3. Now, again, I'm not the greatest mathematician, but 15 and 3 is 18, and her drugs cost 17, and if she would keep the 3, she would have enough for the drugs and 3 Cokes at the nursing home. And I said, Zelma, we don't need that this week. So here's little hunched over Zelma, who then gets on her walker and rises up to her full height of, I think it might have been 4'10", and she looks at me and says, you will never, ever, ever again tell me what to do with what God has called me to give. I learned a pretty valuable lesson that day. That even though she needed heart medicine and she needed another dollar for that heart medicine, she was not going to compromise what she had already decided to give to others. I think that's this woman in this story. She doesn't argue with Elijah. When Elijah says, go and make me a loaf of bread, she starts off by saying, well, I'm on my way. See the sticks in my hands. I'm on my way to go bake the last loaf of bread for my son and I so that we can then die. But then when Elijah says, don't worry about it, she says basically, okay. When you give, does that mean it's going to come back to you? I don't know. Does it matter? What's interesting, if we go back to that Zelma Paget story, she needed one more dollar to be able to give her drug medicine, and what turned out is she found another dollar in her cushions and had enough money to give it to the nurse there at the nursing home, who then could go buy the drug at the drugstore that she needed in the first place. Now, is that going to work out every single time? I doubt it. You're never going to hear me preach a health and wealth gospel that if you give enough, God's going to double it and return it back to you, but I'm not sure it really matters. Because the giving is not necessarily so I can get. The giving is so I can give. But then the third thing comes out of the story. Is I think we need to remember that it's okay to cry out to the Lord. This woman's story doesn't just end with the bread story. Here's her last story from the book of 1 Kings. It reads like this. Sometime later, the son of the woman who owned the house where Elijah lived became ill. He grew worse and worse and finally stopped breathing. And she said to Elijah, what do you have against me, O man of God? Did you come to remind me of my sin and to kill my son? Give me your son, Elijah replied. He took him from her arms and carried him up to the upper room where he was staying. This is probably the top of the house. And laid him on his bed. And then he cried out to the Lord, Lord my God, have you brought tragedy even to this widow that I'm staying with? By causing her son to die. Then he stretched himself out on the boy 3 times and cried out to the Lord, Lord, my God, let this boy's life return to him. And the Lord heard Elijah's cry, and the boy's life returned to him, and he lived. Elijah picked up the child and carried him down from the room into the house, and he gave him to the mother and said, look, your son is alive. And the woman said to Elijah, now I know that you are a man of God. The whole bread oil thing, interesting, that may not have fully proven his point. Now I know that you are the man of God and that the word of the Lord is from your mouth and is true. Can you imagine that story? I mean, she's had Elijah living with her for, we assume, an extended period of time. And during that extended period of time, the promise that Elijah made about oil and about flour never ran out. And then here comes this climactic moment in the midst of the story where suddenly her child that she loves with everything is now on the point of death or dead, one or the other. And she's angry. She's desperate. And she's begging. We won't ask for a show of hands, but I'm pretty sure there's some in here who have had moments when they were angry with God. I know I have. And I know there are some in this room who have been desperate, and they've been in the midst of their situation, and they're seeing everything that's fallen apart around them, whatever it might be, and not only are they angry with God, but they're desperate. And they're willing to do anything to fix what might have happened. She's angry, she's desperate, she's brokenhearted. And Elijah seems to be in the same place. What's interesting is Elijah, and maybe I read this through the wrong lens, but the prayer that seems to come from Elijah to God is not this prayer of confidence that says, God, I'm asking you to do this right now. It is a prayer of begging. Please don't do this. And God hears. I think we have this idea that we can't be frustrated with God. I think we have this idea that there can't be moments in our life when we question God, or when we're angry with God, or we say, God, how could you be doing this? I have no idea why God is letting us go through 2020. No earthly idea. And I may never know this side of heaven, but maybe there's a reason. And all I can do is, in the midst of those times, is say it's all right to question. And it's all right to question when I've got to bury a parent. And it's all right to question when I'm sick and facing cancer. And it's all right to question and cry out when I'm worried that there's less money than there are bills. And it's okay to cry out when I can't have a baby. And it's okay to cry out when we fill in 100 other things that make us cry. But what I learned from this story is, even in the midst of the anger and even in the midst of the desperation, she still says, Elijah, do something. See, if you come to me angry and desperate and begging for something to happen, the best I can do is say, let's go to God. The best I can do, and maybe I can give you some bread, or maybe I can give you the money in my wallet, or maybe I can help you find a new job, or I can do a funeral, but what I can do the very best is point you in the right direction and say, you know what, it's okay to cry. And it's okay to be mad. And it's okay to say, I don't get it, and I want it to be over, and I wish you'd fix it. Because characters all through the Bible do the same thing. But ultimately, what I've got to do is point you to the one that we trust in. Because that's where the answer lies. I asked my dad if I could share this. My dad and I have been texting. I don't know what God's plans are for COVID 2020, but what I do know is it's made some difference in spiritual lives of those that needed to be searching. Because the conversation I was having via text, via email, via sharing sermons was all about how we put our trust back in God. And how we alleviate our fears, and how we alleviate our anxieties, and how we realize that what really matters in this story, no matter how it ends, is the God that is the centerpiece. Because even if this story ends badly this side of heaven, it doesn't end badly the other side of heaven. And we've got to believe that. Okay, Greg Nybert and I were visiting a long time ago, and we were talking about how people were handling all of the stuff going on. And one of the things Greg said is Greg said, I notice how God's people handle this and how people who don't have God handle this. And it's completely different. That God's people are a little nervous and they're a little afraid and they don't really want to be sick and they don't want to die and they don't want to be on a respirator and they don't want to be sick for weeks on end, but they see an end that belongs to God. And those who don't have God, who don't have any religion, all they see is an end. And they see it from a totally different vantage point. See, I see my story, whatever my story might end up with, my story ends with God on his throne looking at me saying, "You are mine, you are covered in the blood of my son, come on into the joy of your master." And it doesn't matter what I've got to go through on here as long as I know that point at the end. Because nothing else matters. It doesn't mean I want my heart broken. It doesn't mean I don't want to go through what our characters go through all through the Bible. What it does mean is even in the midst of those cries, I still have got to trust that God's going to figure it out, whether it's in this life or in the next one. See, that's ultimately a message of hope that we've got to be able to share with a world that doesn't have much of it right now. To say, here's where our hope lies. So we're going to sing a song. We've got elders in the room. We've got Michael and I in the room. We've got people who love you very much. And if you need something, as Kent is leading the song, track one of us down. Catch us at the doors. Whatever it is you need. Maybe it's as simple as you don't have any food in your house. We'll figure something out. Maybe it's as complex as you're worried about a job or a child or one of 100 other things. We're always here at any moment. And we'll point you the right direction, I promise. So if you need us, let us know as we sing.